Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Friday morning. It's Friday, August 7th. Thanks so much for tuning in to EWTN's Catholic Connection. A busy morning, always very informative issues we try to bring to you from a truly Catholic perspective. Today on a Friday morning, of course, after the news and the weather, and there are a lot of storms still developing around the country, we'll give you the update. Our very own Peter Gagnon, the head of EWTN Studios, joins us for the Inside Word at EWTN. I am so excited always to have Peter on because it gives us a really nice snapshot of what's coming up the next week or so. And we have a big week coming up at EWTN because we have some special anniversaries that we'll be celebrating. And we'll be talking more about that next Friday as well. But it is going to be very exciting indeed. And then, of course, all kinds of great things happening with the canonization, or excuse me, oh, well, hopefully that was a Freudian slip and it'll happen soon, the beatification of Fulton Sheen coming up in September. So many good things happening in the One Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church, and we are there, and Peter will fill us in. All right, Fact Check Friday. I wanted to take a look at the media coverage, not only of the original Fauci hearing a week ago, but the hearing yesterday where he was found in contempt of Congress and the media reaction. There is an excellent clip from Senator Johnson from Wisconsin talking about how the left is claiming it was very partisan and it wasn't fair, and Fauci was relentlessly attacked, that he's an old man, he's an old doctor, just retired. But what's so great about Johnson's testimony, his statement yesterday, is that he goes through what happened in the process of trying to address the issues of COVID. And no one can deny that we were duped. And it wasn't only Fauci. There were a number of players involved, as we know, and they worked together. And as Bill Donahue, a very trusted Catholic source, said earlier this week, there are so many questions that have to be answered. Fauci said the vaccine was safe. In his own diary, which he did not deny belonged to him, that was in his opening statement, admitted in the diary that he actually had a blood clot as a reaction to the vaccine. He was very worried about that getting out. He admitted that he just made up the 6 feet rule, just made it up, that there was no science for that. He also admitted that there was a high probability that it did indeed come from the Wuhan lab versus a wet market. So these are just a few of the statements that were in the diary, his diary, which he said in the only thing actually that he said of any substance in the hearing last week, that it was his unredacted diary that was released. All those comments in his 1,000-page-plus diary, all the comments were made on a government computer on which he was working when he was a point person for COVID for the government. Those are facts. And we're going to take a look at the media reaction. And I believe, and Vanessa Denhagarmo and I have been talking about this as a former secular journalist, that the reason the media are circling the wagons around Fauci is because they're also circling the wagons around themselves, because they are hugely culpable in all this. So we'll take a look at that on a Fact Check Friday moment at 28 minutes past the hour. And then Dr. Monica Miller joins us. Every year there is a beautiful event that takes place honoring the lives of unborn babies who were aborted. The National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Babies takes place in September, and there is most likely one right in your own backyard. So do please attend. They're absolutely beautiful ways to express the love and support and dignity of all human life. And she'll give us the details. Hour number two, in 2 cents, taking a look at the gospel for today. Wow, it's a powerful one, reminding us that we have to take up our cross. But you know what? It's not a bad news gospel. There's never a bad news gospel, because it's a good news gospel. But I think we take it negatively when our Lord says, take up your cross. What we don't, I think, realize, and speaking of personal experience, when you first begin to do that in your own life, you think, this is just going to be so hard, I'm going to be so miserable the whole time. But what happens is, when you say yes to the Lord and you agree to follow him and his will, things change, and in a good way. And then we're going to take a look at high school chaplains for athletes. That's going to be a good discussion. And then wrapping up with my dear friend, Peggy Stanton, has a beautiful new book. I love the title of this book, United Saints of America. She joins us in hour number two. And someone with whom you're very familiar, our very own Father Mitch Pacwa, just happened to write the foreword for this beautiful book that is put out by Marian Press, The United Saints of America, on pilgrimage with our Mother Mary from sea to shining sea. Amen to that. Weather-wise, the National Weather Service says scattered showers and storms expected across portions of the central and eastern parts of the country through the end of the week. Meanwhile, dangerous heat intensifying across the southwest and the intermountain west. Hot, dry weather and increasing winds will allow elevated wildfire conditions to return to the northern intermountain west, where air quality issues are persisting from the ongoing wildfires. Already 5 minutes past the hour. Appreciate your listenership, and we have to get started on the news right here on EWTN. Tammy Trujillo reporting. President Trump says the Strait of Hormuz is just about open, but that a deal has not yet been finalized at this point.
Trump told reporters Thursday that negotiations with Iran are continuing, and that in the meantime, the U.S. continues to blockade Iranian ports and have military control of the waterway. He added he thinks we're doing fine. The president also continued to deny the military was running out of munitions and claimed the U.S. had an unlimited supply of certain types of munitions, insisting that we're in great shape. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
And Iran and Oman, meanwhile, reported to be very close to an agreement on the shipping Strait of Hormuz. Nick Harper tells us it comes as the president, as you just heard, says there has been a lot of progress made in reopening that vital waterway.
What Iran seems to be saying and what the Trump administration seems to be saying are still at odds. In terms of the Iranian-Omani agreement, this is all about creating a security mechanism that would regulate which commercial vessels can pass through the Strait of Hormuz.
Iran says the U.S. is ready to return to commitments, but denies that talks have been taking place. The deputy foreign minister making the comments yesterday without much explanation, possibly referring to the agreement made in June before a ceasefire fell apart. Under that agreement, the U.S. had promised to lift its naval blockade of Iranian ports while maritime traffic would have free transit of the Strait of Hormuz. President, meanwhile, signing new executive orders to restrict birthright citizenship and ban birth tourism. Speaking from the Oval Office yesterday, President Trump saying the 14th Amendment applies to children of slaves, and that notion is long outdated.
Wealthy people are building businesses around birthright citizenship. That's not the way it was supposed to work. It's a disgrace. They're buying their way in, and we're not going to let it happen.
The order restricting birthright citizenship involving children of foreign diplomatic staff, children of people classified as alien enemies, and children born in U.S. territories. The other order banning citizenship to children born of mothers who entered the U.S. for the sole purpose of having a child here. Both orders will no doubt be challenged at the Supreme Court, already striking down Trump's attempt to end automatic birthright citizenship to children of non-citizens. And a federal judge confirming that Haitian migrants in the U.S. have now lost their temporary protected status. This following a Supreme Court ruling allowing the Trump administration to end the program. The decision does affect more than 300,000 Haitians who had been protected from deportation, which was granted after the 2010 earthquake in Haiti. The Department of Homeland Security ended TPS for Haitians on July 27th, while the administration continues efforts to end protections for more than 1 million migrants from other countries. Daniel Martindale tells us the man arrested ahead of the president's visit to Los Angeles is now identified as a Marine veteran.
Downey resident Janine John Taylor was arrested on Sunday near the Trump National Golf Club in Rancho Palos Verdes. That was 2 days before Trump spoke at an RNC fundraiser at the golf course. Taylor is facing both state and federal charges for possession of an unregistered short-barreled rifle. Taylor was a U.S. Marine who was deployed to Iraq in 2008 and Afghanistan in 2010 and worked as a warehouse clerk. He was a corporal in the Marines, serving from 2008 to 2016. He was also a security guard who was licensed to carry guns, but those licenses were recently canceled. I'm Daniel Martindale.
The FAA has completed a preliminary review of a Tuesday incident involving President Trump's helicopter and a commercial jet. Reporter Garrett Hake explains Marine One was taking off from the White House on Tuesday afternoon at the same time an Envoy air flight took off from Reagan National Airport.
The FAA saying there was a, quote, momentary loss of separation during which controllers maintained contact with both aircraft and that, quote, the president was never in any danger.
FAA policy requiring all commercial traffic at Reagan National to stop when the president's helicopter leaves the White House. The two aircraft reportedly came within a mile of each other. The agency says they will continue the safety review and determine if corrective action is now needed. And the U.S. Senate is hoping to get some things done before leaving Washington today for a five-week recess. Republican Majority Leader John Thune telling Politico the Senate hopes to pass a stopgap funding bill today and a bill imposing sanctions on Russia. Republicans are also hoping to get enough votes to confirm Todd Blanche as Attorney General, but Thune indicated that he was still working to get that final vote. Rory O'Neill tells us there's an increase in the number of Americans who believe couples with children should be married.
Roughly 4 in 10 Americans say it's very important for a couple to be legally married if they have a child together. That's up 10 points from a previous Gallup poll taken in 2020. The increase is driven by Republicans, where 58% say the marriage of parents is very important, a 22-point bounce in 6 years. 82% of the people who took the survey said their parents were married when they were born. 67% were raised in two-parent households. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Holy Father's visit to Assisi yesterday was an embrace, a sign that the successor of Peter walks along the people of God and shares in their hopes and struggles. With those words at the conclusion of the Mass presided over by the Pope in the Basilica of Santa Maria dell'Angeli before the final blessing, one of the young people in attendance, Francesco Verone, addressing the Holy Father to thank him for his visit. His presence, Verone said, encouraged young people not to be afraid to choose what is good and to believe the gospel can still change the human heart. Verone giving voice to the pain of fragmentation and the fear of loneliness experienced by so many young men and women. Vatican News reporting precisely for this reason, he said the experience in Assisi had been deeply formative. In the city of the poor man of Assisi, the young people had been able to experience firsthand that Jesus keeps us united and that we are not alone. Just as Pope Leo's Episcopal motto proclaims, in one, we are one in Christ. No one is a stranger. No one is excluded. Whether all are true brothers and sisters, not by chance, but because we are children of the same Father. Also in Assisi, the Pope's pastoral visit yesterday and for the inauguration of the Global House of Friendship and Hope, Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, speaking with reporters about the upcoming Israeli elections in October, he stressed that everyone is looking to those elections as though they will solve all the problems. In reality, the problems of the Middle East are the kind that will require a great deal of time, he said. We need new faces, new leaders, and the voters will decide. Speaking to Vatican media, the cardinal describing the situation in Jerusalem as one of great tension. Although he noted we are not in a state of war with indiscriminate bombardments, violence has become the general lens through which relationships are experienced in Gaza, the West Bank, Israel, and Palestine as well. He said Christians are deeply weary of this endless back and forth of announcements that are then contradicted by events. He added it's become part of daily life. And unfortunately, he said this has created an ever-growing sense of distrust among the population to the point people no longer believe anything, even when it turns out to be true. And when something genuinely positive does happen, the cardinal said, people struggle to believe it because they are no longer accustomed to seeing good news. He said, in short, it is a very, very heavy situation. Already 13 minutes past the hour, wishing you a beautiful Friday, moving quickly through the month of August. And of course, so much going on in the world and in the church. And that's why every week we do a segment on Fridays called The Inside Word. It began with the former head of EW10, of course, the former president, President Emeritus, Doug Keck. And now Peter Gagnon, our president of EW10 Studios, joins us every Friday, doing a great job as well, letting us know what's happening at the network, what you see on air and expect online, so you don't miss a thing. Peter's with us up next. The Inside Word, Peter Gagnon, our head of EW10 Studios, on the phone with us this morning on a Friday, August 7th. Thank you so much, folks, for tuning in to EWTN's Catholic Connection. We love speaking with you and bringing you good news, especially about our amazing programming. Peter, there's so much going on. And, of course, next week we have some big anniversaries. So what are we looking forward to right out of the gate today? What do you think? Good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you. Let's start off with talking about some of the programs you're airing even tonight. So today at 5:30 Eastern, we have a program called Pure in Heart. And it's Kieran Hart is a Catholic apostolate that started in Dublin, Ireland, and really focuses on the church's teachings on love, purity, chastity, and human sexuality, geared towards young people. It started in Dublin, but it now spread to four other countries. And it's really a great organization in, you know, to help. In when you start presenting truth to young people, they really absorb it and they love it, and they are looking for that. They get encouraged and they get excited. So, but we need organizations like this out there to reach out to the young people. So that's a great program. It airs today at 5:30. Learn more about Pure of Heart. The next one, which is interesting, is airing tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. The Kingdom Within, The Way of the Desert Fathers.
Ooh.
So, you know, the Desert Fathers. With their
I
early
love the
Catholic
Desert
Hermit.
Fathers. Awesome.
Yeah. They're awesome. And people don't realize, you know, they started as early as the 3rd century, who their ascetical life in the Egyptian deserts, you know, it formed the basis of Christian monasticism. So learn more about the Desert Fathers, because they're very intriguing, amazing, amazing church fathers. So tune into that. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. Next is, speaking of monasticism, and it's St. Dominic, Speaking with God and of God. So this is a original drama we produced on the life of St. Dominic, founder of the Dominican orders. You know, and he just worked, Dominicans worked tirelessly. They popularized the rosary, preaching the gospel, and opposing heresy. So that's going to be in our cinema slot, which we try to do every Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern. A film where the family can come together and watch a entertaining, but also, like I say, an inspiring and educational program. And this one is on St. Dominic. So, and that's his feast day, right? So tune into that tomorrow evening. Another feast day coming up, and I know this is someone you love, Edith Stein, right? Her feast day is on Sunday.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And she's just amazing. And you know, people need to learn more about her and her history. So we start off with on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. a bookmark with Doug, and he talks with Dr. Robert McNamara, who wrote a book on Edith Stein, with examines her thoughts and how we see ourselves, relate to other people, and ultimately to God. Because you know, Edith was just amazing in her reflections and her philosophical writings in that area. So,
well, also, especially, she's someone to whom women can look in the church, because she really was, I don't want to call her a woman's liber, but she understood the need for women to be in the world and or in the home. There were places for women in all areas of society. I mean, she was way, way, way ahead of her time. But she always, of course, did that from a Catholic perspective when she converted.
No, 100%, and it shows how a person with a, you know, obviously she had a very strong personality, super intelligent, always learning, but lived her faith to the fullest once she truly understand what her purpose of her life was. And that's, you know, she's a girl, obviously, like you said, a great example for women, but for men as well, to say, are we truly living the faith, and are we truly reflecting, you know? And she's a great, for me, a great inspiration on learning. She was always learning, always wanting to understand more about God, understand more about herself and her place in God's creation. And it led to her conversion. So we have actually two other programs on her. One is called The Way of Edith Stein, which this was filmed both in Poland and Germany.
Ooh.
And it's a documentary on her life. So you can kind of learn more about it. That airs on August 9th at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. So write that down, The Way of Edith Stein. And then the next one is Edith Stein, St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, which was her, you know, religious name after her conversion and when she entered the Carmelites. And that's a two-part, actually, series. It aired August 10th and 11th, both at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. That's Father Charles Connor. So this is a biography he did on her, two parts. And Father Charles Connor, just a fantastic historian. He's done a number of programs at EWTN over the years. But the part one will look at her Jewish background and what began her interest in Christianity. And then
St. Teresa of Avila, she read her autobiography.
Exactly. And the witness that she saw of other Christians and saying, you know, what is driving these people to actually be so devoted into this thing called, to this person, Jesus Christ, right? And so when she saw devotion in others, and then started saying, well, I need to actually look into this, you know, I wasn't just going to ignore it and say, well, this isn't real. Let me just ignore it as an atheist. Let me investigate. And so when, like you say, you're reading Teresa d'Avila, led to her conversion. So part two will be actually looking at Edith Stein, her philosophical writings herself, and then her Christianity and her eventual martyrdom at the hands of the Nazis. So, like I say, incredible witness, incredible story. People need to learn more about Edith Stein.
I'm writing this down because writing all this down. This is all so great. Okay, so you said this is August 10th and 11th, right? So what time again, Peter?
Correct.
All right.
Yeah, at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, August 10th and 11th,
okay,
part
great.
One,
perfect.
Part two.
Okay. Good.
And so, and let me just say this also, on our Plus platform, so you go EdubTim Plus or just EdubTim.com and type in a search, just put in Stein, and you'll see we have other programs. We did actually a documentary called Mitch Pacwa that we shot as well on Edith Stein. And he interviewed, went to a lot of places associated with her life, interviewed a lot of people. So you can find even more content on her on our Plus platform.
Great.
Another thing that we try to do at EWTN is we go to, a lot of people would love to go to these conferences literally around the world but can't attend. So we have something called EWTN On Location. And we record either ourselves or we have the organizations will take talks at different conferences. Last month there was the 6th World Apostolic Congress on Mercy in Vilnius, Lithuania. You know, not a lot of people are going to go to Lithuania for this.
Right,
event.
Yeah.
But Edith Chen was there, and we shot the talks. And so throughout the next few weeks, we're going to be airing talks from that World Congress. So on August 9th at 10 p.m. is going to be Father James Mallon's reflecting on parish life and divine mercy. So you can check that out. Another close to home for Birmingham program that's airing on August 11th is Father James Coyle. I don't know if you know his story. A lot of people don't. But he was a parish priest in Birmingham who was actually murdered by a Protestant minister because the minister's daughter converted to Catholicism, and Father Coyle married his daughter to a Catholic man. And he was actually, the Ku Klux Klan was very involved at that time. There's a lot of anti-Catholicism, and he was murdered. So we have a documentary on his life, and each year Birmingham, from the cathedral, we have a mass. So at 10:30 a.m. Eastern on August 11th, you can see this documentary on this man who's a very holy man from Ireland and led the flock here, and learn about his story and his faith and his perseverance. And afterwards, there's a mass that we air from local that our Bishop Stephen Reka presides over.
That's incredible. The stories that are there. This is what I love about what we do, because sometimes it can be very disheartening when you look out into the world, you see everything going on, there's so much division. Maybe something happened in your parish about which you're unhappy, or maybe, you know, this happened with this priest or whatever. But at the end of the day, Peter, the church is the church, and there is so much depth and so much beauty and so much teaching. You can't exhaust it in one lifetime, right?
No, you can't. No, you can't. And there are so many inspirational stories out there. You know, God gives us these people and fills them with these graces to live these heroic lives, and they're great inspirations for us. So when we're having our difficult times, you look at the life of Father Coyle, who was willing to stand up and literally give his life for his flock and not back down. And
Amen.
And it inspires us to live out our faith more fully. So, and these are stories, you know, not many people know about Father Coyle.
This is great. I'm so excited, too, about all the Edith Stein, the Desert Fathers. Unfortunately, I'm going to be in front of the TV a lot this weekend or hitting the the record button. Peter, great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for all this really just directing all this great coverage, folks. And next week is going to be fun because we've got some big anniversaries coming up for the network. We will be right back. Fact Check Friday coming up. Stay tuned. By the way, if you were driving when Peter was giving all the wonderful things that are coming up in the next couple of days and next week, just go to EWTN.com. And also you can listen to the archive of this podcast to get more information. But such great things coming up, especially this weekend with the Desert Fathers and St. Teresa Benedicta and so much more. Okay, so here we are at Fact Check Friday. I want to take you back several weeks ago toward the end of July after the World Cup, and there was so much coverage of the World Cup, and what was all over social media I found very uplifting on a number of levels. First of all, I found it very wonderful that so many people who had never visited America before, all the big World Cup fans, and as we call it in Europe, it's called football, and it's the sport in Europe, and Italy was very upset they didn't make it to the World Cup. That's a whole other story, but it is always big news, soccer or football in Europe. So thousands upon thousands of people traveling to the United States, many staying for weeks at a time to follow their favorite team. And what was amazing to me was how the media in Europe were totally called out by people who had been duped by the media. And I played a montage of people apologizing, say, America, you deserve an apology. And the media need to be held to task because they repeatedly lied to us about Americans, about the country, about the mood, about the lifestyle. I mean, they went on and on and on. They didn't bring up political parties. They didn't bring up anybody in office or previous administrators. They just said that they, for their whole lives, have been lied to. Now, I'm telling you this in looking at the media coverage, not just during COVID 6 years ago, but I'm telling you this because we need to examine, or as Archbishop Chaput would always tell us, the now retired Bishop, Archbishop of Philadelphia, a great teacher, we need to know how the media work so they don't work on us. And they're still trying to work on us, circling the wagons repeatedly, and we'll have some stats on that, a study, and protecting Anthony Fauci because they went along with everything he said and they used him as the only source in terms of medical expertise or so-called medical expertise during the height of COVID. And then they get a hold of his diary, which he admitted in the one statement he did make, in addition to invoking the Fifth Amendment 111 times last week. He did say, this was my diary, unredacted diary. So it's his. Wasn't forged, wasn't planted, it's his words. And in that diary, he said, and you could see it online. And do you know that it has been revealed that Senator Rand Paul said there was a password for everybody in Congress, especially the Senate Homeland Security Commission, to access the information in the diary, and not one person left of center, as in the Democrats, asked him for the password. Not one person looked at it. We have Bill Donahue, who is a respected Catholic source, one of the top Catholic sources in the world, always on EWTN, has a great reputation. He has called out Anthony Fauci in writings, especially since the hearing last week, and he was on the show talking about it on Monday. I want you to hear what Senator Johnson said, because now the media are claiming it's all about partisanship. It's all about the extreme right going after poor retired Dr. Anthony Fauci. Take a listen to the very crucial statement that was given yesterday by Senator Johnson from Wisconsin regarding the attempt to try to make this about partisanship versus the reality of what we were told and the incredible impact that we're still feeling from COVID-19. Tom, roll the tape.
If these investigations are one-sided, it's because one side simply doesn't want to look at the truth. They want to bury the truth. They want to memory hole it. They don't want to look at the Fauci diaries and take a look at how contradictory what he wrote to himself, how contradictory it was to what he actually told the public. I think one of the revelations of those diaries, I think probably the most significant one that's being overlooked, was early on in the pandemic, he wrote in his diaries he thought COVID would be maybe twice a bad flu season. Now, I'm not downplaying a bad flu season. We have them oftentimes. They overwhelm hospitals. Something to take seriously. But a pandemic that's going to be twice that, is that really worth destroying people's lives, shutting down businesses, destroying an economy? I argued back then that it wouldn't be. It's been 6 years since the pandemic began. We have not had a reckoning, of what happened. Last Wednesday's hearing was an excellent hearing from a standpoint of legitimate questions being raised, legitimate questions the American people want answers to, legitimate questions that some of them only Anthony Fauci, Saint Fauci, Mr. Science could answer. And even though we have quotes of him saying, I'm not afraid of any oversight committee, I'm happy to talk to any oversight committee, I have nothing to hide, that's not the position he took last Wednesday. What he displayed last Wednesday was contempt for Congress, contempt for this committee, contempt for our investigation, the same contempt that our ranking members have shown for the diligent oversight and the exposing of the truth that I've been undertaking for 6 years. There's nothing rushed. It's been one-sided, but not because we haven't reached out, not because we haven't involved the other side. The other side, like way too many Americans, have just closed their eyes, covered up their ears, and refused to look at the truth. I am definitely going to vote yes on contempt of Congress. And my investigation has just begun.
Again, that's Senator Johnson from Wisconsin yesterday at the hearing on the Homeland Security Commission's attempt, and they did vote to find Fauci in contempt of Congress. So I just ask you to think about how I began this segment, talking about thousands of people from around the world who admitted in a number of different videos, montages, it was all over social media, that the media in their countries repeatedly lied to them and had conditioned them to think a particular way. The same happened with COVID. The same is still happening with COVID because the media are extremely culpable in this. You want to talk to both sides? You want to hear from both sides? Go to EW10 News Nightly last night and see what a great balanced job we did on actually talking to both sides on this, Democrats and Republicans. But at the end of the day, this was Dr. Fauci's diary. He did contradict repeatedly in his own words in that diary what he said to himself about serious conditions, about the vaccine, about shutdowns. Totally different what he told the public. And we are still suffering for it, including the Catholic Church. Please think about that. And this is why we do Fact Check Friday. We need to know how the media work so they don't work on us. We'll be right back. Nine minutes past the hour. Welcome back. EW10's Catholic Connection on a Friday. It's August 7th, 2026. So great to be with you every day here on EW10. And great to catch up with a very dear friend of mine who's done so much consistent, amazing pro-life work, Dr. Monica Miller. Monica, I can't believe we're almost to that point where we have the beautiful memorials coming up for the aborted babies. Thanks for joining us and good to have you on the program again.
Yeah, thank you so much, Teresa. It's so good to be with you.
So let's take us back. How long have you been doing this? How did it all start?
Well, we do this every year now for the last 12 years on the second Saturday of September. And in 1988, our group, Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, we buried 1,200 aborted babies at the Holy Cross Cemetery in Milwaukee. Let me put a shameless plug for my book.
Sure, no problem.
Abandoned, the Untold Story of the Abortion Wars, because I talk about how we were able to access a find of aborted babies at the Northbrook, Illinois. Northbrook, Illinois, there is a pathology lab, Vital Med. Vital Med was receiving the bodies of thousands, I'm not exaggerating, thousands of aborted babies were being shipped to this particular pathology lab in Northbrook, Illinois. And we found out about it. We were able to retrieve, people might not even believe this, but in 10 months in 1988, we had a retrieval project. We were partnered with the Pro-Life Action League. The Pro-Life Action League is also the co-sponsor of the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Babies with our group, Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. So at that time, Joseph Scheidler was the executive director of the Pro-Life Action League. So we teamed up to retrieve the bodies from the loading dock of the Vital Med laboratory in Northbrook, Illinois. At the end of our retrieval mission, it's completely absurd. But we had retrieved 5,000 bodies of aborted babies by November of 1988. So basically, we were spending the year retrieving these victims of abortion and burying them. So on the 25th anniversary of that retrieval, we, with the Pro-Life Action League, we inaugurated the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Babies. So we've been doing this now since then every year. And being on your program, Teresa, what we want to do is urge people to participate. And participation is basically two things. We still have plenty of time for people to step forward to actually organize one of these memorial services. So far, we have about close to 100 all over the United States memorial services that are going to take place on September 12th. Mm-hmm. So coming up, right, September 12th.
The website, I must say, Monica, is so beautiful. It's so well done. I just want to throw this in there. By the way, talking with Dr. Monica Miller from Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, internationally known author and pro-life speaker, nationaldayofremembrance.org. Again, that's nationaldayofremembrance.org. Now, what I think is great, in addition to the beautiful way as you have set this up on the website to give people the sense of the sacredness here, but also, it's so easy to do your own remembrance, right?
Right. That's what I want to urge, that people step forward and organize in their own vicinity a memorial for these, this is all these aborted babies, Teresa. That's all they're ever going to get right now is our remembrance. We have to look at it as if we are adopting them. These were abandoned, murdered, unborn babies, unwanted, and literally thrown in the trash. I mean, what were they doing on the loading dock of the Vital Med pathology lab? They were set out for disposal. Even on the boxes that contained the bodies of these aborted babies, Teresa, it's just so absurd.
Yeah. It sounds like something out of a science fiction horror movie.
Yes. Thank you. Scrawled on the side of these boxes, for disposal.
Ugh.
And they were being picked up by a waste disposal company, and that's what was going to happen to these babies. They were going to be dumped. They were going to be trashed. And we retrieved them. This was a sacred mission for us to go to this darkness. What I say, what we did, Teresa, we went to the edge of the world.
Yeah.
Now, I talk about this in my book, Abandoned, The Untold Story of the Abortion Wars. We went to the edge of the world. What is the edge of the world, Teresa? The edge of the world is the is the furthest extremity away from human communion, where this is where the unwanted go, and to retrieve them was to bring them back into the orbit and into the boundaries of the human family. And the only thing these unwanted aborted babies were ever going to get was a human burial. And I always found it ironic. You know, in the Christian religion, we have the seven corporal works of mercy. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the last one? The last one is burying the dead.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the first work of mercy that these unborn children were ever going to get, a burial. And so September 12th, the National Day of Remembrance. So people need to just go to the website, nationaldayofremembrance.org, click on locations. So there are about 50 grave sites for aborted babies all across the United States. Now, most of them are probably covered at this point. However, there are hundreds of memorial markers. I've got to give a lot of credit to the Knights of Columbus, because they erected these memorial markers. So find one in your vicinity. All you got to do is click on locations, go to your state, whatever state that you live in, and scroll down. You'll find your state, click on it, and you will find where are these memorial markers. And you can very, it's so easy. Then all you have to do is sign up right there that you're going to do a memorial service at the marker, or maybe even the gravesite if it happens not to be covered yet, for the National Day of Remembrance for aborted babies.
Well, it's so easy because you have detailed instructions or local leaders arranging to hold the memorial service with the authorities, promoting the event, organizing the agenda, inviting the media, documenting your memorial service with pictures and video. So this is not rocket science. This can be done very easily. No, seriously, this is helpful for people because they're saying, well, how am I going to do this, right?
Exactly. The website is very, 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 very
user-friendly.
Yeah. User-friendly. Lots of documentation there on how do I do this, right? What do I put on the order of the service? You know, what do you got to do? You got to of course advertise. You know, put it out on your email list.
Call your local Catholic radio station, your local evangelical station.
Right.
Get it out there, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Get it announced, and you show up. You know, September 12th at the either the grave site, if that happens not to be covered yet, or the memorial marker. So the markers, a lot of them are at parishes, so maybe it's at your local parish, it might be a memorial marker, or even in a cemetery, where babies might not actually be buried at a cemetery, but there might be a memorial marker at a cemetery to honor the victims of abortion. So like I said, Teresa, this is the only thing these unwanted, murdered unborn children are ever going to get, is that we honor them, we adopt them as if they were our own children, and draw attention to the injustice that happened to them in the killing of unborn children.
What's been the response over the years in terms of folks showing up? They're very well attended, aren't they?
Yes, they are. We've had up to over 200 of these services that take place on the same day. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think of it. On the same day, in the past, we have had over 200 memorial services all across the United States, from California all the way to New York, from Michigan all the way down to Texas. So we really want to encourage people to participate in this, Teresa.
Do you know of any folks starting one in a new location that you've heard of so far, Monica, for this year?
No, I haven't. I'd have to go and look at the website to see who's signing up. That's a very good question. If there's anyone who's doing something that's new, maybe unprecedented. We have found that there has been, I'm encouraged by this, Teresa, really, really excellent response. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, and thank you for allowing me to be on your program, Teresa, to promote this, because like I said, this is the only thing this side of heaven that these unborn children are going to get is that we honor them. If we don't do it, it's not going to get done.
Right.
And this is a beautiful witness. We have had media coverage. I mean, here in Michigan, especially the Oakland Press, I got to give them credit, even with color photos of what we've done in the past.
That's amazing. That's great. I was going to say, let's give them credit when credit is due. They normally don't cover
exactly.
things like this, but good. Okay, great. No.
Exactly. In the past, we had Archbishop Vigneron. Alan Vigneron has, spoke at our memorial service, the one that we do at Holy Sepulchre Cemetery. We have, of course, this year, Holy Sepulchre Cemetery in Southfield, Michigan. There are two graves of aborted babies. You were there in 2018 when we buried 14 aborted babies that were found in the trunk of Michael Roth's car.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Driving around with aborted babies in his trunk and with all kinds of horrible so-called surgical equipment. Monica, we're almost out of time. I want to give the website again because I really want to encourage folks to go to this beautiful website. And if there's not one in your area, you can do this. It's such a way to honor the babies, but also it's healing. We've had many grandparents of who's lost babies through abortion that show up and want to pray. There are even women who've gone through post-abortive healing. This can be a very moving day for them. National Day of Remembrance. .org. It's coming up in September, just over a month away. NationalDayOfRemembrance.org. And if you are starting one, please let Dr. Monica Miller know. There's a contact link on the upper toolbar of the website. So please let them know. NationalDayOfRemembrance.org. There's prayers, there's information, there's instruction. You can do this and you should. NationalDayOfRemembrance.org. Thank you, Monica. Thank you so much
God
for all you do.
God bless you. Thank you, Teresa.
You too,
Take
honey.
Care.
God bless you and much success with this beautiful event. We'll
Thank
be right
you.
Back to let you know what's coming up in hour number two of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for tuning in to hour number one, hour number two of Catholic Connection on a Friday morning. Continue, of course, on EW Chan's Radio Extra. In addition to the news and the weather for you, we have our 2 cents segment, Tease 2 cents. I'll be talking about the gospel for today, taking up our cross and following Jesus. Whoever tries to keep his life will lose it. Whoever laid down his life will gain it. And there's so much in this gospel. I love it. I'll explain. All right. We're also going to talk about the importance of high school chaplains for all athletics. And then my dear friend and a fellow Catholic radio host and a wonderful witness to the faith, the beautiful, lovely Peggy Stanton is going to be joining us. Our very own Father Mitch Pacwa wrote the foreword for this fantastic book. This is the best title in the world. So Peggy and Vanessa and I always have a girls' lunch, a Christmas lunch every year, and a summer lunch representing three generations of women in media because we all come from the secular media. And, of course, we catch up and talk about our projects. And I can remember last summer when Peggy told Vanessa and I about this book, we were like, oh, my gosh, this title is phenomenal. The United Saints of America. Listen to the subtitle. On Pilgrimage with Our Mother Mary from Sea to Shining Sea. You can get the book at the EWTN Religious Catalog, of course, and also from Merriam Press. It is just a beautiful book, and we will discuss, even endorsed by someone also very familiar to our EWTN viewers and listeners, Father Gerald Murray. There you go. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's a Friday, as I like to say. Second hour coming up.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy Friday, hour number two of EWTN's Catholic Connection here on EWTN Radio Extra. Thanks for staying tuned to the program. We have more great content for you as always. We will have, as we always do every day, Monday through Friday, your news and your weather to keep you updated. You don't have to turn anywhere else because we let you know what's going on in and around the world and in the church. And then for our 2 cents segment, if you hadn't had a chance to read the gospel for today, do the daily readings, I will share the gospel with you and discuss on what it means to me and what I've learned from it after really praying about it and thinking about my own life experience and how wonderful it is to take up our cross and follow the Lord. And I want to share with you a beautiful, beautiful painting, and I'll describe it for you. Radio is what? Theater of the mind. There is a beautiful painting in one of the chapels along the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem. Now, the chapels, I don't know if they're still open, but when we first started going to the Holy Land, you were able to stop in these chapels as you were doing the Stations of the Cross, and you could say a little prayer along the way. But there was one particular image of our Lord that was so powerful to me and ties in with this gospel beautifully, so I'll explain. We're going to be meeting up with Drew Valinsky, who is going to be talking to us about the importance of high school chaplains for all athletics and for all schools and why that's so important. And then we'll wrap up, as I mentioned, so excited to have my dear friend Peggy Stanton with us, and she's going to talk about her beautiful new book, The United Saints of America, on pilgrimage with our Mother Mary from sea to shining sea. So that's going to be a great conversation with Peggy Stanton, I'm sure. Weather-wise, not so great. We still have a lot of problems out there. We have showers and storms, according to the National Weather Service, in the east, and then dangerously hot and dry conditions in the west. Scattered showers and storms are expected across portions of the central and eastern U.S. through the end of the week. Meanwhile, dangerous heat intensifying across the desert southwest and the intermountain west. We have hot, dry weather and increasing winds that will allow elevated wildfire conditions to return to the northern intermountain west. And of course, because of the wildfires, they have a lot of air quality issues. So that is going to be a continued problem for the next several days. It's 2 minutes past the hour. We appreciate your listenership on EWTN, including on EWTN Radio Extra. Let's get started with the news on EWTN right now on a Friday. Tammy Trujillo tells us President Trump says the Strait of Hormuz is more or less open right now, but that a deal has not yet been finalized.
Trump told reporters Thursday that negotiations with Iran are continuing and that in the meantime, the U.S. continues to blockade Iranian ports and have military control of the waterway. He added he thinks we're doing fine. The president also continued to deny the military was running out of munitions and claimed the U.S. had an unlimited supply of certain types of munitions, insisting that we're in great shape. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Meanwhile, more on Iran. Iran and Oman are reported to be close to an agreement on shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. Nick Harper tells us it comes, as you just heard, as the president says there has been progress made in the reopening of that vital waterway.
What Iran seems to be saying and what the Trump administration seems to be saying are still at odds. In terms of the Iranian-Omani agreement, this is all about creating a security mechanism that would regulate which commercial vessels can pass through the Strait of Hormuz.
Iran saying the U.S. is ready to return to commitments, but denies that talks have been taking place. And the deputy foreign minister making the comments without much explanation, possibly referring to the agreement made in June before a ceasefire fell apart. Under that agreement, the U.S. had promised to lift its naval blockade of Iranian ports while maritime traffic would have free transit of the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump signing a new executive order to restrict birthright citizenship and ban birth tourism. Speaking from the Oval Office yesterday, he said the 14th Amendment applies to children of slaves, and that notion is long outdated.
Wealthy people are building businesses around birthright citizenship. That's not the way it's supposed to work. It's a disgrace. They're buying their way in, and we're not going to let it happen.
The order restricting birthright citizenship involving children of foreign diplomatic staff, children of people classified as alien enemies, and children born in U.S. territories. The other order banned citizenship to children born of mothers who entered the U.S. for the sole purpose of having a child here. Both orders will no doubt be challenged after the Supreme Court already struck down the president's attempt to end automatic birthright citizenship to children of non-citizens. A federal judge, meanwhile, confirming that Haitian migrants in the U.S. have lost their temporary protected status. This follows a Supreme Court ruling allowing the Trump administration to end the program. That decision affecting more than 300,000 Haitians who had been protected from deportation, which was granted after the 2010 earthquake in Haiti. The Department of Homeland Security officials ended TPS for Haitians on July 27th. The administration continues efforts to end protections for more than 1 million migrants from other countries. Daniel Martindale explains the man arrested ahead of the president's visit to Los Angeles is now identified as a Marine veteran.
Downey resident Janine John Taylor was arrested on Sunday near the Trump National Golf Club in Rancho Palos Verdes. That was 2 days before Trump spoke at an RNC fundraiser at the golf course. Taylor is facing both state and federal charges for possession of an unregistered short-barreled rifle. Taylor was a U.S. Marine who was deployed to Iraq in 2008 and Afghanistan in 2010 and worked as a warehouse clerk. He was a corporal in the Marines, serving from 2008 to 2016. He was also a security guard who was licensed to carry guns, but those licenses were recently canceled. I'm Daniel Martindale.
The FAA completing a preliminary review of a Tuesday incident following President Trump's helicopter and a commercial jet. Reporter Garrett Hake explaining Marine One was taking off from the White House on Tuesday afternoon. At the same time, an Envoy air flight took off from Reagan National Airport.
The FAA saying there was a, quote, momentary loss of separation, during which controllers maintained contact with both aircraft, and that, quote, the president was never in any danger.
FAA policy requiring all commercial traffic at Reagan to stop when the president's helicopter leaves the White House. The two aircraft reportedly came within a mile of each other. The agency will continue the safety review and determine if corrective action is needed. And the U.S. Senate is hoping to get some things done before leaving today for a five-week recess. Republican Majority Leader John Thune telling Politico the Senate hopes to pass a stopgap funding bill today and a bill imposing sanctions on Russia. Republicans are also hoping to get enough votes to confirm Todd Blanche as the Attorney General, but Thune indicated he was still working to get the final vote. Rory O'Neill tells us there's an increase in the number of Americans who believe couples with children should be married.
Roughly 4 in 10 Americans say it's very important for a couple to be legally married if they have a child together. That's up 10 points from a previous Gallup poll taken in 2020. The increase is driven by Republicans, where 58% say the marriage of parents is very important, a 22-point bounce in 6 years. 82% of the people who took the survey said their parents were married when they were born. 67% were raised in two-parent households. I'm Rory O'Neill.
And Pope Leo's visit to Assisi yesterday was an embrace, a sign that the successor of Peter walks alongside the people of God, sharing in their hopes and their struggles. Vatican News reporting with those words at the conclusion of the Mass presided over by the Pope in the Basilica of Santa Maria degli Angeli. And before the final blessing, one of the young people in attendance, Francesco Verone, addressing the Holy Father to thank him for his visit. His presence, Verone said, encouraged young people not to be afraid to choose what is good and to believe the gospel can still change the human heart. Verone gave voice to the pain of fragmentation, the fear of loneliness experienced by so many young men and women. Precisely for this region, he said, the experience in Assisi had been deeply formative. In the city of the poor man of Assisi, young people had been able to experience firsthand that Jesus keeps us united, that we are not alone, just as Pope Leo's Episcopal motto proclaims, in the one we are one in Christ. And in Christ, he said, no one is alone, no stranger, no one is excluded. Rather, all are true brothers and sisters, not by chance, but because we are children of the same Father. Also in Assisi for the Pope's pastoral visit yesterday and for the inauguration of the Global House of Friendship and Hope, Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, speaking with reporters about the upcoming Israeli elections in October. He stressed everyone is looking to the elections as though they will solve all the problems. In reality, he said, those problems are the kind that will require a great deal of time, and we need new faces, new leaders, and the voters will decide that. Speaking to Vatican media, the cardinal describing the situation in Jerusalem as one of great tension, although he did note we are not in a state of war. With indiscriminate bombardments, violence has become the general lens through which relationships are experienced in Gaza, the West Bank, Israel, and Palestine. He said Christians are deeply weary of this endless back and forth of announcements that are then contradicted by events. It has become part of daily life. Unfortunately, this has created an ever-growing sense of distrust among the population, he said, to the point that people no longer believe anything, even when it turns out to be true. And when something, he says, genuinely positive does happen, people struggle to believe it because they are no longer accustomed to seeing good news. It is, in short, he said, a very heavy situation. Moving right along, a Catholic parish in New York has suffered what the Diocese of Brooklyn says is the fourth incident of vandalism in 2 years after a man destroyed a statue of the Blessed Mother in an early morning attack. The destructive episode at St. Rita Roman Catholic Church in the neighborhood of Long Island City in Queens occurring earlier this month on August 1st when a man jumped a fence around the courtyard of the parish and smashed a statue of the Virgin Mary with a hammer. Photos of the attack showed the statue of Mary knocked off its pedestal and in pieces. The Brooklyn Diocese saying in a news release, the New York Police Department is investigating the incident as a hate crime. A diocesan spokesman telling EWTN News no arrests have yet been made in the case as of yesterday. Now, meanwhile, also in New York, a man is suspected of setting fire and burning down an old church in Brooklyn. He's due in court today. Residents are reacting to that arrest of John Jones and arraignment after prosecutors allege he lit South Bushwick Reformed Church on fire in June.
I've never seen that person in this neighborhood at all. I'm outside every day.
And it's so hurtful that someone would stoop that low to burn down God's house.
The church was engulfed in flames and destroyed. It was built back in the 1850s and designated as a New York City landmark. Authorities say he has no known connection to the church, and the motive at this point is unclear. Senator Marsha Blackburn is the winner in the Republican primary for Tennessee governor. In a speech following her victory, she outlined her priorities for her state.
We need safe communities. You want to make certain we support law enforcement, that we're cracking down on crime, that we're treating criminals like criminals, and law enforcement like the heroes that they are.
She defeated Congressman John Rose and State Rep. Monty Fritz. All were running to replace term-limited Republican Governor Bill Lee. President Trump is an ally of Blackburn's, but has also backed Rose in the past and did not endorse a candidate in the race this time. Meanwhile, Jerry Green is projected to win the Democratic primary for governor. It is almost 13 minutes past the hour. One more story for you this morning. Listen to this. The 127-yard sale, also known as the world's longest yard sale, is taking place across multiple states. It starts in my home state of Michigan. The event runs 690 miles through Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Georgia before ending in Alabama. It gives the public a chance to stay off of busy highways and instead enjoy scenic routes through small towns and rural communities. The world's longest yard sale runs through Sunday, and for more information, to grab your great discount or your big bargain, 127yardsale.com. 690 miles. That's incredible. We'll be right back. Past the hour, wishing you a beautiful Friday, or Friday as I call it. Can't believe we are through the first week of August already. So many great events, coming up next week in honor of EWTN's anniversary. We'll hold that for next week because we've got some exciting news and events for you, including a special appearance by some of our longtime EWTN hosts who've been with us just about since the beginning of the network. Again, talk about that next week. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to do your readings today, but the gospel for today is one of my favorites because it just reminds us of what God has in store for us. And it's all good because God wants what's best for us and Father knows best. So the gospel for today is from Matthew 16, verses 24 through 28. Now, I want to talk a little bit about another verse that tends to, I think, scare people or wonder about Christianity or faith or what's going to happen to us if we're all in for Christ in the church. And there's a big misunderstanding. So how many of you are familiar with the verse in Ephesians 5:22, where we are told that wives must be submissive to their husbands? But we oftentimes hear that and think that is sexist, misogynistic. This proves that the church doesn't care about women. You've heard all the stories and on and on and on. But then later on in that same scripture verse, it also says that men have to love their wives as Christ loved the church. How did Christ love the church? He died for the church. He died for us. So basically, there's an even larger, heavier burden, if you would call it, which it isn't, because it's a sacrifice, and it's amazing when husband and wife submit and commit to each other to become one. But the husband is called to basically lay down his life for the wife and for the marriage. People forget that. And oftentimes see that verse as a negative versus a positive in terms of what it says about what true love looks like in a marriage between a husband and wife. And also if you think about the marriage between Christ and his church. The church is a bride, Jesus is a bridegroom. A priest is married to the church. All right, so let's go to the gospel for today. Again, which is from the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 16, verses 24 through 28. Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wishes to come after me must not deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What profit would there be for one to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? Or what can one give in exchange for his life? For the Son of Man will come with his angels in his Father's glory, and then he will repay each according to his conduct. Amen, I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." The Gospel of the Lord for today on this August 7, 2028. Now, I mentioned at the wrap-up of the first hour of the program that I was going to reflect upon, as it ties in with this gospel, this beautiful image in one of the chapels along the Way of the Cross in the old city of Jerusalem. Many people will take a large cross and carry the cross on their shoulders through the various stations of the cross, and it's a wonderfully powerful thing to do. We've done that many times with our pilgrimage groups. You may also walk the Via Dolorosa on your own. And I haven't been there since 2019, so I don't know if the beautiful little chapels that are built and situated under the stations are open now. They may be. They were open when we were there. Of course, that was pre-COVID. And in one of the chapels by the stations where our Lord falls, of course, we know in the Stations of the Cross he falls three times, there is a chapel and there is this image above the little altar. And it's a mosaic. And it is absolutely stop you in your tracks, gorgeous. It's the image of Jesus standing on a seashore, and he's carrying the cross, and he is looking very burdened, but also very determined. And there's this look of ultimate love and sacrifice in his eyes. And so he's heading toward the sea, and behind him, row upon row upon row upon row upon row of believers also carrying their cross. And they look the same way. They look determined. They don't look sad. They look like they are just willing to, "I'm in, Lord. Here I am. I have come to do your will." And I think we have a misunderstanding as well, at least I did, speaking from personal experience on this beautiful gospel today. But when we take up our cross and follow the Lord, we don't lose anything. We gain everything. And this is not just about, I think, this is my own, you know, that's come to me in prayer. This is not just about persecution. Look, we are in a fallen world. It's not if we're going to, when we're going to suffer, or if we're going to suffer, it's when. It's going to happen. Maybe it's happened a lot. It could happen again. We don't know. There are some people who've, you know, had their share, and the Lord is saying, okay, take a break. But we live in a fallen world. We're going to have issues. That's just life, okay? But this verse, I believe, or this gospel passage, denying ourselves and taking up our cross and following the Lord, it may seem like a cross at first. Maybe it's something that we don't want to do. Maybe the plans that we had for ourselves, not that they're bad, Not that we don't want something that is righteous and that is in accordance with church teaching, but it might not be what the Lord has in store for you. And that's hard to accept sometimes. And speaking from personal experience, I really thought even after I came back to the church and that Deacon Dom and I healed our marriage, that I would die in the secular media somewhere on a live shot in Southwest Detroit reporting on a fire or a murder or a barricaded gunman. Because that's what I did. I didn't know how to do anything else but news reporting. And so I thought when I came back to the church and I had this big job at the ABC affiliate, that this was great. I was going to, you know, in addition to being a general assignment reporter, I was able to do a lot of different reporting on faith-based issues. I had a wonderful news director who appreciated my background and allowed me to do that. But God had other plans. And the interesting thing is, I thought that I was supposed to bloom where I was planted at this big TV station. But then I started to notice the change in the secular media, and I was very, very frustrated. I could not figure out why the Lord had allowed me this big opportunity when all of a sudden I was realizing, and this was back in the late 90s, early 2000s, as I walked away from the secular media in the year 2000 specifically, I thought that this was going to be the be-all and end-all for me. Why was I feeling this way? Why was I feeling and seeing the many problems with the media? And again, this was 26 years ago. And it's much worse now, as I always mention every week in Fact Check Friday. But God had other plans for me. And I fought those plans for at least 2 to 3 years until I finally said, okay, uncle, I give. And gradually, it didn't happen overnight. But I eventually saw the plan that God had for me, and it wasn't to stay in the secular media. No, it was to do something very different. But I did realize after this tug of war, when I really thought and prayed about it, okay, the Lord saved my life, saved my soul. The church saved me, saved my marriage, and was able to bring me and Dominic back to each other and back to Jesus, back to, you know, our marriage, to save it and heal it. So what am I worried about? If God can do that, and trust us, we were basket cases, he's got something in store for me. But again, it's not as if I said, oh, tiptoe through the tulips, this is wonderful, here I am, Lord, I've come to do your will. No, I fought it. I'm a stubborn Calabrese. You can't mean that I have to leave the secular media. Oh, woe is me. But the Lord had a bigger plan. Took me years to figure it out. But I had to deny my own desire of being in the secular media and say yes to the Lord's plan for my life. But I found a whole new life, a whole new world in Catholic media, in speaking about our marriage. My husband became a deacon. It's too hard to explain it in 9 minutes. But never be afraid of taking up your cross and following Jesus. You may lose a particular part of your life, but you'll gain everything and more in return. Trust him. He's God, and we are not. We'll be right back. Minutes past the hour. Great to be with you on Catholic Connection. Drew Valinsky is with us now. He's a theology teacher at Cleveland's St. Ignatius High School. He's also the director of the Sports and Arts Chaplaincy Program. And he was featured on Catholic Sports Radio and the Faith in Sports radio show. And in the different conversations, he shared how the Sports and Arts Chaplaincy Program helps our students see that the value of sport and the arts goes far beyond, and I love this, the scoreboard, the stage lights, or that stat sheet. Rooted in St. Ignatius of Loyola's call to find God in all things, a program inviting young athletes and artists to reflect how God is present in the practice, performance, and daily lives. I love this. Thanks for joining the program, Drew. Appreciate it. So just talk about this program and what it means to you and how it all started, actually. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Therese. Well, it came from, I'm a son of the school, and when I came back to teach and coach, I was looking at this huge athletic infrastructure that we have. Moreover, I was looking at where guys' hearts are. It's an all-guys high school. Where guys' hearts are, where they spend their time. Like, I remember as a kid waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to hockey practice. I never woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning to study theology or to read an English book, with the exception of when I didn't do my homework. And so I saw, like, there's this huge opportunity, given the amount of time and energy that guys will put into their sports and into the art. And I started to ask this question. I was like, how do we use that to invite them to know Christ more deeply? What is it to create a Catholic community? What is it to show them where God's grace is already available and present? Because in part, the argument is the stuff that they love about sports and the art, the community they get, the identity that they get, the purpose that they feel, those are all avenues for God's grace. Those are all God reaching out to them and inviting them into the something more. So it was from those questions that eventually the program that we have, right now we have, 29 active chaplains spanning the fine arts and sports at the varsity level, the JV level, and the freshman level. And we've been lucky enough to seed a number of other chaplaincy programs around the country. I have a map in front of me in my office, and there's a school, Santa Margarita in California, that's following our model. Dallas Jesuit down in Texas is doing it. Boston College High School is. So there are a number of other places around the country that are doing this. Off that same idea, that there's this great opportunity for both accompaniment and evangelization in sports and the performing arts.
What do you see, Drew, in terms of stress with young athletes? I mean, there's so much going on, not only just the pressure to perform and to perform well, maybe possibly a college scholarship riding on it, but of course, college sports, high school sports, sports are in general in the news so much because of the transgender ideology. What are you seeing in terms of stress with these kids?
That's a great question. I do some side work where I with our Diocese of Cleveland CYO, and to give you some sense of the scope of that, this year in our diocese there'll be 22,000 kids who play a sport for the Diocese of Cleveland CYO.
Wow.
And we do a lot with mental health, dealing with depression and anxiety in that space, so much so that the New York Times sent a reporter and to see some of our coaching formations that we do. And there is an article written up. So that is a sideways to say you've got your thumb on something important. And here, a story to articulate that. I'm a teacher at the school. I also direct this program. And there was a lad who came, or actually he emailed me, and he said, hey, do you have time to talk? I'm not starting in football. And I don't know who I am without that role. Like, my heart broke. There's a lot of work that some folks have done, including, I want to get his name right. I believe it's John Smith. He was at Baylor. Now he's at BYU on kids, sports, and identity, where it gets rooted. And obviously our hope is, my hope for that lad and all of our kids is to have their identity rooted in Christ. Like, that's a firm center. And then everything else can rotate around that. If you think of Bishop Barron and how frequently he's spoken of, like, the rose window metaphor. So there's a lot of stress, anxiety for something that's supposed to be fun, for something that's supposed to be joyous. So what we found is, number one, in creating chaplaincy programs, it gives kids another outlet, another adult to talk to. And we know from the research that the more adults that kids have in their lives, they can say that they can go to, and they say value them independent of what they're able to do, simply because they are, that helps with mental health. Number two, our kids, in the data that we collect from them in the surveys at the end of the year for a chaplaincy program, they tremendously value the time set aside to reflect and to pray. That even when it comes to sports and the performing arts, they're so busy. Their schedule is so much. They got practice. They got games. They've got tech week. That what we do is we're carving out time in the week where they just have to sit and be present, where they have to sit and contemplate the greater things. And they see tremendous value in that. And our hope is that we're showing them this model of This is what we're called to do as Catholic Christians. This is what is on offer in the Mass. This is what's on offer in daily prayer. This is what the good, thriving life looks like that Christ calls us to.
We have about 2 minutes left, Drew, and I want to make sure we give you an opportunity to talk about the wonderful conference coming up in October. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So from October 14th through 16th at St. Ignatius, we're bringing in people from around not just the States, but up in Canada and from over in Europe. Truth be told, anybody from around the globe is willing to come to talk about this model of chaplaincy and how to apply it to high school situations, to grade school. We have some incredible keynote speakers, Father Nate Wells, the chaplain of the Notre Dame football team.
Wow.
Dr. Jay Carney, and Max Engel, who are two professors at Creighton University and co-authors with Matt Hoven of an incredible book, On the Eighth Day, which is a perspective on spirituality for Catholic sports. Brian Polian, who's the head coach of John Carroll University's football team and also an athletic director, the athletic director at John Carroll, who coached at LSU, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Like, they're the keynotes, but we also have 24 other people from around the country who are doing this ministry right now, who are part of it. So folks from California, from Texas, from Florida, from the East Coast, so that every one of our panels has somebody from the South, somebody from the East Coast, somebody from the Midwest, somebody from the West Coast, so that it is a truly, like, that we're trying to cover as many different contexts as is possible. All guys high school, all girls high school, schools with a particular charism, diocesan schools. Right now, I believe we have folks signed up and registered from, I want to get it right, I think it's 42 different institutions.
Oh,
from
my gosh,
29.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. From 29 different states. So it is, while it's the first of its kind, and we'll do this every 3 years, it has momentum. There's interest in Rome from the Dicastery on Culture and Education. So it's a big thing. If anybody is interested, they can look up, like, North American Sports and Art Chaplaincy Conference.
It's also on the website for St. Ignatius, and your picture is there as well, ignatius.edu.
There we go.
Ignatius.edu, but the title of the conference is North American Sports and Arts Chaplaincy Conference. We'd love to have you back on, Drew, as we get closer to this and also after to see how it went. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Again, the website, ignatius.edu. We'll be right back. Go grab a copy of this beautiful new book from my friend Peggy Stanton, The United Saints of America. What a title for a book. On Pilgrimage with Our Mother Mary from Sea to Shining Sea. It's published by our friends at Merriam Press. Peggy Stanton, the ABC TV network's first female news correspondent in Washington, has had a distinguished career as a journalist, congressional spouse, author, painter, and world traveler. She's also the author of From the White House to the White Cross, Confessions of a TV News Correspondent, and The Order of Malta Minutes with the Catechism, 2023. That was published, and both the other books have been published by Merriam Press as well. Peggy, good morning, my dear. Always great to catch up with you.
Good morning, Teresa.
I love this book.
Since our Christmas lunch.
Yeah, our Christmas lunch. I was telling people about that in the first hour of the program, our Christmas and our summer lunch that we get together, representing three generations of females in the media, you, me, and Vanessa. And boy, when you told us last year about the title of this book, I remember we were sitting in that beautiful country club along Lake St. Clair in the Grosse Pointe area, and Vanessa and I almost dropped our forks because the title of this book is so great. The United Saints of America. Congratulations. It's a beautiful book, Peggy.
Thank you. Thank you. Remember, I was then taking a poll because I was in a war. We're great friends. My editor, Dr. Joe McAleer, he had a different title, and I wanted the United Saints of America. And it won hands down every time I did my poll, especially with you and Vanessa were adamant.
Yeah.
But you should feel, because you're in this book, Teresa, you don't know it, in the sense that, you know, I had never done a travel book. I'm basically a storyteller, but here's my friend Teresa, who's travel guide extraordinaire, And so I love that book of yours, Shrines and Wonders. If it, I haven't had a chance to read the one on Francis. If I got the right. So anyway, it was a good guide for me. So thank you, my dear.
Well, this book is gorgeous. Now, the pictures are phenomenal. How long did it take you to collect these photos? And are many of them yours?
Some are mine, but actually, Julia Rose, after I wrote all the text and everything, and had chosen the shrines I wanted to put in the book, and she scoured, went to websites of these shrines and asked them for pictures. So a lot of those pictures were supplied by the actual shrines.
It's so gorgeous. And so talk to us about the idea of United Saints of America. Peggy, when did it come to you?
Well, initially, Joe's idea was he wanted it focused on Marian shrines and the fact of Mary's influence in the founding of America, in which she had a huge influence. But as I was going through the research, I was just so awed and impressed by the saints with the big S, means they've been canonized, and those with the little S, they're just some heroic Catholics. And, it just came to me, we should be talking about the United Saints of America, who were united, in how were they united? They were united in one specific cause most of them held dear, and that was to bring Jesus Christ and his gospel to ears that had never heard them.
Right.
And so I said, we should call this the United Saints of America.
And then the subtitle, On Pilgrimage with Our Mother Mary from Sea to Shining Sea. And I think that it's released this year as we continue to mark the 250th birthday for our country. It's just so timely. And then our very own Father Mitch Pacwa from EWTN wrote the foreword. How did that happen?
I asked him.
Like a good reporter.
Well, I've been on his show, EWTN Live, which I love, on Wednesday night with the multi-minutes with the catechism and from the White House to the White Cross. So I gotten to know him then. I don't know him well, but I'd gotten to know him. He's such a wonderfully friendly man. So Joe McAleer, my editor, really wanted him, so I said, well, I'll call him, see if he'll do it, and he did.
What I love about it is a travel guide, but it's also a spiritual guide. So there's two directions you can take with this book. You can do your own pilgrimage. This is great to have with you if you're visiting a state, even if you're visiting loved ones in a particular state with not a pilgrimage in mind, but it's something
right.
You can do, break away, take this book and use it as a guide. But also
right.
It's so spiritual in terms of what's available to us about what to pray for and with whom to pray, actually, in the saints.
Yeah, I tried to include in the small space I had a little history of the state and how Christianity came to it, particularly Catholicism, and then when a particular devotion like the Immaculate Conception, what does that mean? And then, so we tried it to, I tried to put some catechesis in there. And then, basically you and I and Vanessa in our hearts are storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
So there were certain stories that just touched me. And that I really looked for that with shrines, because I think what draws you often to a shrine, don't you,
mm-hmm.
is the backstory,
yep.
something one wonderful, inspired this shrine.
Absolutely. And I'm looking in particular, this is a place that I really want to visit, and I've seen and read so much about it. The Miraculous Staircase, Loreto Chapel in Santa Fe. Talk about a story, Peggy.
Yeah, that really is interesting. They had built the chapel, and they had a choir loft, the sisters, but they had no way to get to the choir loft because there were no staircase, so they started praying a novena to St. Joseph to find a carpenter. And they no sooner finished the novena than a carpenter showed up at the door and began working on it. And there are no nails in it. You know, it's wood based. And when he finished, he disappeared. Never asked for any money or anything. So that is a wonderful story. And I have been actually, you know, serendipity many, many, many years ago. And I came to the same conclusion the nuns did.
Which is what? That it was St. Joseph himself, right?
Yeah. You know, how many people know, for instance, Teresa, how many people and how many thousands have gone to the Mayo Clinic for excellent medical care? How many realize that the clinic was actually started as a hospital by nuns,
mm-hmm.
and the nuns hired two physicians on their staff, and you know who the physicians were? The Mayo brothers.
Mm-hmm. It is phenomenal. You've done such a great job. I mean, obviously, you know, all of us when we do our books, you, me, and V, we are reporters and we're storytellers. So research is something we love to do. What surprised you most as you're going through all these different places in the country? Was there something that really stood out to you in terms of these shrines and places of worship?
Boy, a lot of them did. I don't know if it surprised me, but as the story I love is, if you've been to Arizona and the Sedona Red Rock country, have you ever been there, Teresa?
No, I haven't. I've been to Phoenix and I've been to that area, Scottsdale, but I haven't been to Sedona.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, it just stretches and stretches of land full of beautiful red rocks, and a lot of them take shapes that resemble something, and there's what's called the Cross Chapel, which is hewn right out of a huge red rock. But the story of that chapel begins in, of all places, Hungary, because a female architect viewed the Empire State Building, and it had just been finished, I guess. And somehow, the way she was looking at it, she saw the configuration of a cross.
Wow!
And she said to herself, "Oh, wow! What a concept for a church!" So she had this idea of building this massive big church with this idea in mind over the Danube River. Well, along came World War II, and there was the end of that idea. They had to flee to America to save their lives. And so the idea just lay dormant for 20 years until she bought a ranch in Arizona. And she was standing there on top, looking down on the Red Rock country. And she said, what a place for a chapel that cries out to speak to God. And she looked over and she saw a red rock that resembled Madonna and Child.
Wow.
And she said, that's the place. And isn't it funny? Another serendipity, Teresa. A couple of years before that, I had actually been in Sedona, and I had been photographing all these different images, and I took a photograph of that Madonna and child. I didn't even know the whole story. I didn't know the story then.
Wow, and now here you have it in your new book. Well, Peggy, this went by so fast. We have to have you back on because there's so many other stories. What a beautiful book. Congratulations, United Saints of America. On Pilgrimage with Our Mother Mary from Sea to Shining Sea. Again, the United Saints of America. That title is so good. I just love it. It just so is that we were like, yes, you've got to keep that title. We were like, you know, heck no, we won't go. We have to have the United States of America. Vanessa and I were just insisting on it. I'm glad that they understood. Okay, so published by our friends at Merriam Press. And again, it's by our friend Peggy Stanton, who has an incredible history in journalism and travel. And gosh, just an amazing woman. And we're blessed to call her a friend. Peggy, great job, sweetheart. Sweetheart, we will be in touch to have you back on. What a beautiful book. And if you're deciding to take some time this summer, you've got a few weeks left. Summer is not over. And take this book with you, The United Saints of America, On Pilgrimage with Our Mother Mary, From Sea to Shining Sea. Well worth the investment. It's gorgeous. We'll be right back. Looking at this picture of which Peggy was speaking, this beautiful image of the Chapel of the Holy Cross, Sedona, and the nearby Madonna Rock. It looks just like a rock that juts out from the mountain along the Amalfi Coast in my favorite town on the Amalfi Coast called Priano, a very similar image of the Blessed Mother holding the baby Jesus. And they haven't built a shrine there yet in that portion of Italy, but I think they're thinking about it because it's just everybody sees it and calls it the Madonna and Child. And if you see this picture and it's on page 31 of Peggy's beautiful book, you will definitely think the same. But this book is incredible. I mean, we only had, you know, 12, 15 minutes with Peggy. We have to have her back on. There are so many amazing places to go. And of course, EWTN is featured prominently at Mother Angelica and the Shrine in Hansville. That's another place. I keep saying it. I know I sound, if you're old enough to remember records, if you don't look it up online or go to a museum, I sound like a broken record, but I love the Shrine. It's one of my favorite places to be to find peace. Whenever I get down to EWTN to tape programs, people at Irondale are amazing. They're so much fun. But the Shrine is very special. You really need to check it out. And there's a conference coming up. We mentioned that yesterday. There's a beautiful conference coming up about the Divine Child of Jesus, to whom, of course, Mother Angelica was dedicated. Coming up on Monday, looking forward to chatting with you on a Monday morning. We are going to have our scripture verse of the week, of course. And then we're also, speaking of great EWTM programming, going to be featuring another great installation from our friend Matt Swaim and Journey Home Highlights. Have a great weekend. God bless you. We'll talk to you on Monday. Ciao, ciao.